With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you making the show a part of your day, as always. Appreciate you getting up with us. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, it is Texans training camp. They are off today. No practice today. Fourth practice of the day yesterday. It was hot outside, but there was some hitting going on. It was all good. We're going to dig into plenty of that today. John McClain joins us at 7 o'clock since we take you up to Texans training camp live at 8 o'clock. He moves up an hour this week, so he'll be with us in the 7 o'clock hour. Seth, how many times did you get up from the couch yesterday between the hours of 2:10 p.m. and, let's say, 8 o'clock p.m.?
I was not on the couch for more than 7 minutes during that whole time. I was cooking the whole time.
Okay,
I'm going to have a whole afternoon here. I'm going to get some stuff done. I cooked meals for the next 3 days. So between a lot of grilling slash meatball making going on.
Nice.
And it was a good afternoon. It felt like if I had a normal job, it felt like it would have been the dream day of taking the day off where I just relaxed and made it feel like a Sunday. It felt like Sunday yesterday afternoon.
It did, yeah.
Because I got to watch sports, which we weren't all so certain. Let's all remember, let's step back and have some perspective on this. 2 months ago, we didn't have a clue if any of this was going to work out or not. Yeah. And now yesterday, I spent a total of, 8, 9 hours just lounging around, taking care of business while I watched baseball and basketball.
So you had the TV going on in the background while you were making meatballs.
Yes.
Awesome. Yep.
I felt like I pretended I was Italian for part of that time.
Did you speak with an accent while you did?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Brandy got sick of it real quick. That lasted about 3 minutes. And then I shifted out of Italian and did my best Pepe Le Pew French accent.
Yeah.
Tried to get it going in the kitchen. That
there
didn't
you
work
go.
Out either.
Tutor, yeah, yeah. In the kitchen. So it was a big day yesterday. The Astros, I think the Astros get a win that was kind of I'll call it a found money win. That you win a game where your only real professional hitters right now are in the lineup are Yuri Gurriel and Alex Bregman. No disrespect, Jose Altuve. You're barely a professional hitter right now.
Oh, my gosh.
He's hitting 168. He'll be fine.
Hey,
he's going to come out of it.
He's better than Toro, Sean.
He's better than Toro. For you and me and the rest of Houston right now. We'll get into the Astros in the next segment, but Seth, the Rockets gets a really, I would say, a very, very encouraging performance by the Rockets. And maybe encouraging is the wrong word. I didn't get too worried when they lost those last three bubble games because I think they were just kind of riding out the rest of the 8-game seeding game. Harden, who can go get buckets, who you say we got a guy down. But that said, you know, they've been a good team this year. The Rockets choked them out defensively. To me, that was the story of the game, was the Rockets on the defensive end.
I think part of that, too, is that Russell Westbrook's energy continued to be a presence. As people that were there said that Westbrook was by far the loudest guy in the arena from the bench.
You can actually hear it in that arena, right?
And I think that Westbrook might almost be more valuable on the bench in some respects just because he's not going to ever let anybody slow down or let up. And that was the most encouraging thing to me, where we'd seen some sporadic effort out of this team in the bubble, right? And we've seen sporadic effort out of them in the playoffs in the past before Westbrook got there. But the fact that there's a certain style of play that they need to have to make up for their lack of size, and a lot of it just centers around energy. And they had it the entire game. I think whenever Oklahoma City, you know, they went to their version of the death lineup at the end of the first half and had a little bit of a spark there. But any time that Oklahoma City started to mount some kind of a comeback, the Rockets reeled them back in. And that's where I think for the first time seeing it in the playoffs without Russell Westbrook on the court, I really, really genuinely started to believe, okay, this is a team that's going to be a real headache. This Rockets team is going to be a real headache for absolutely everybody they face in the playoffs.
Well, especially if the teams that are thought to be so far ahead of everybody else, and I get it, it's one game. This thing will play out. That's what makes the NBA playoffs something that generally in a best-of-seven series, the better team comes out of a best-of-seven series. But early on, look, what's happened early on in this postseason, Seth, a couple of days in, are the same things we were seeing during those eight seeding games. And if this is what the Rockets are going to be, then if we're living in a world where the Lakers are vulnerable, where the Bucks are vulnerable, where the Clippers probably should have lost to the Mavericks if Kristaps Porzingis doesn't get kicked out of the game. Again, one game, one day, it's a very small sample size. But so far, so good for the Rockets. Here quick from Mike D'Antoni talking about how they executed the defensive game plan.
It looks like a zone. It's small. I'm glad you said that because that's one of our mantras is make it look like a zone because it didn't. It's a switching man for man, and but it should look like a zone. So they did a good job with that, and we just got to continue to see where the weak spots are, get them better.
And that's where I think, and D'Antoni addressed this, Chris Paul addressed it, there's nobody that plays defense switching that aggressively like the Rockets in the NBA, and that was the first time Oklahoma City saw that. And they'll adjust to it. Yeah. They're going to get better at it, so there will be challenges here. This is the great trap that the first game of any playoff series always is. It feels like it couldn't possibly be any different outcome. And I think the other thing is, too, Oklahoma City, look, Oklahoma City is not going to continue to let James Harden run unfettered through the defense. They're going to start trapping him at points, and then that's when it becomes even more on everybody else to step up, like they did yesterday. I mean, yeah. It was just a great team effort yesterday, but how are the Rockets going to withstand perhaps shooting slumps by several other guys while James Harden's also getting double-teamed?
Well, this is where having a roster so deep with shooters, if you get a sense of who the hot hand is early in a game, Ben McLemore's been the hot hand since he got into the bubble. But Jeff Green was the big story last night, 22 points off the bench, both from distance, and he was driving to the hole. He looked really, really good. Here's Mike D'Antoni on Jeff Green.
Jeff played really well. He opens up so many other possibilities, getting guys shots or wide open shots for himself, and or just, you know, giving James a little bit of a break about how to get open. In a sense, James, all he has to do is pick and then pop back. If they don't switch, he goes to the rim and dunks. If they do, then James has the ball in a great spot.
They got Jeff Green on a 10-day contract, Seth. They got Jeff Green on a 10-day contract. He might be the most important guy off the bench for them right now because of what he brings. He's the one guy of these guys they bring off the bench that's the guy. They all can shoot, but he's got the versatility in his game. There's times he brings the ball up the court. There's times where he's the tallest Rocket on the court, so he's drawing the taller defensive assignments. He's become a real weapon for this team off the bench all of a sudden.
Okay, you yesterday called it out and said that Jeff Green would be the unheralded superstar of the game.
Yeah, you asked each of us the question, who outside of like the Harden, Russ, Eric Gordon, like the big frontline guys, who would be the unsung sort of hero in this series for the Rockets? Yeah. And I said Jeff Green.
You said Jeff Green.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so that's one game.
One game in. Who did you say? You said Austin Rivers.
I said Austin Rivers, yeah. And
Austin Rivers, I think, is a good pick for that kind of thing.
That team looked so much more dialed in than Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
You know, it just that was what was so refreshing is that at times over the past 5-6 years, really with the Harden Rockets, at times it seemed like they either eased their way into the playoffs or even in that, remember that Clippers series? At times it seemed like they didn't even – the Clippers – the amazing comeback Clippers series, what ended up being one of the greatest series in franchise history. There were times in that series where it looked like the Rockets barely knew they were in the playoffs. Yeah. This was the exact opposite. And honestly, I'll credit Russell Westbrook for that. Russell Westbrook's energy, when it comes from somebody like Russell Westbrook compared to when it comes from, like, Pat Beverly, who we love but who is not a superstar leader of the team, I think it matters a lot. And to see that hunger from Westbrook even when he was on the bench and to see that intensity, that was really cool to see how it kind of flowed through everybody else on the team.
The Astros got the ultimate found money win yesterday. We'll explain why next.
My endurance has been pretty good ever since after that first start. And then today I felt like my arm speed, that was the first time all year where the arm speed was starting to get better. And so things felt a little crisper because my arm speed was a little better. So today I thought it was the best start so far, feeling health-wise, endurance-wise, stuff-wise.
That is Zach Greinke, the MVP of the Astros so far this year in this shortened season. 23 games in, they win their sixth straight game. Again, he gets a no decision. He's had some tough luck in starts. They have not gotten him a lot of run support. The Astros haven't gotten anybody a lot of run support, ironically, over their best stretch of baseball of the season here. They've won six in a row, but they've been a lot of close one-run games, low-scoring games. Yesterday, really fast game, even though it went to extra innings. The game was over, and there was still about a half hour to spare before the Rockets game started at 5:30. But Zach Greinke, Seth, looking really good. Eight innings of shutout ball, three hits, no walks, seven Ks. When you made the trade for him at the trade deadline last year, if you were Jeff Luhnow, that's what you were looking for. RIP Jeff Luhnow. That was a nice final salvo by him as the general manager. Zach Greinke's been really, really good.
That was, and as we, by the way, rapidly approach another trade deadline, I doubt there's going to be quite anything quite in the makings like that trade.
I think it's going to be dead. I don't think there's anything that's going to happen.
I don't think the problem is that everybody's making the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
So anybody, I don't know. And it's just the trade deadline, people don't anticipate it being much of anything. I do think if you look at the pieces from last year, I mean, Josh Rojas, I think Josh Rojas has one at bat this season. Seth Beer is not lighting it up. None of those guys. Corbin Martin.
Corbin
Martin currently has a ERA of 5.59.
Okay.
Whatever. I mean, in five games played, that could have been one bad start or one bad appearance. But regardless, none of these guys were going to be doing for you immediately what Greinke is doing. Long term, you could talk about whatever. But yeah, it's. If you're going to tell me that Verlander was going to be out for potentially the entire season, he is playing catch right now, by the way, then, yeah, this would have been just an absolutely – this would have been the Astros, in a lot of respects, would be dead in the water right
season's
now.
Season's over Greinke. If you don't have Greinke on this team.
Yeah.
See, and if Verlander's out and you don't have Greinke on this team, the season's over. You know, even with an expanded playoff, because Seth, we're 23 games in now. The hitting has been very spotty, and we're nearly halfway through the season. Like, I get it that if it were 162 game season, it'd be like, it's April. They'll be fine by June. Like, October's going to be here before we know it.
And this is where the expanded playoffs are keeping it from being as urgent as it otherwise would be. Because yeah. You're looking at how many games left? 37? What are they?
37 games left.
The 37 games left. If this was 37 games left in the regular season and you were hovering between second and third in the standings, you'd be freaking the hell out because it's not so easy to say, well, the bats will come back at some point. The bats will return. No, like this is critical that the bats return pretty quickly if you really want to have a realistic chance in the playoffs. The pitching has been just so much vastly improved over the last week or so, but you just can't expect that to sustain you through a serious playoff push if this offense doesn't come back.
They got a win yesterday, Seth, against one of the better offensive teams in baseball. And I know that the next 2 days are going to be in their house in Coors Field. I get it. That factors into the stats. But nevertheless, this is a team that has a bunch of professional hitters in the lineup, Colorado, and they won a game yesterday, the Astros did, with Miles Straw and his 100-whatever batting average, batting leadoff, Josh Reddick in the two-hole, Kyle Tucker hitting fifth, struggling Altuve hitting sixth, and then the bottom third of their order was Toro, Maldonado, and Mayfield. That is seven of the nine guys in the lineup, Seth, and they won a game yesterday with that lineup.
Yeah, and you think about the kick to the groin, because all this stuff came out within an hour or two before the game or right up to the game, because you find out at the very beginning of the game, hey, where's Springer? Oh, no big deal. Off getting an MRI on his wrist yet again. Dusty Baker thought about putting him in later in the game.
He showed up in the middle of the game. That's the best part. Like, he got an MRI. He's probably yelling at his Uber driver, like, dude, I got to get to work. I'm late. What do you do? I'm the center fielder for the Astros. The game started an hour ago.
At least that, you know what, that might, it's a lot easier in an empty stadium than it would have been under normal. Can you imagine Springer trying
7 o'clock traffic trying to get to the game.
So there's that. Let's see. Yordan on the IL.
Yeah.
So even remember when I slipped up and said that he was on the IL 2 days ago before he was?
Yeah.
I'm going to claim that I had inside information.
you slipped.
I forgot. Yeah, I released that before I was supposed to release it. Yeah.
It's great. Here's Dusty Baker on his concern about Yordan Alvarez.
You know, he barely got back, you know, from the coronavirus and now this. So, you know, he's going to go get some a second opinion, I think, and you know, we'll see, you know, what turns out from there.
I guess the one silver lining in all this, Seth, I mean, I'm reaching a little bit here, but I'm trying to be glass half full, is it's not like last year if you lost Yordan in August because he got called up in June and became immediately one of the most dangerous hitters in baseball. You haven't been relying on Yordan so far. Like, the concept of Yordan in 2020 is pretty foreign anyways, other than the 3-run home run that he hit in his first at-bat. You know what I mean? It's not like all of a sudden you're looking, you're going, wow, whew, man, we've been winning games lately, but Yordan's been the glue in the middle of the lineup. Like, no, he showed up. You know, he's basically like a unicorn or Bigfoot. He showed up. I think I spotted Yordan, and now he's on the injured list.
There's grainy image of Yordan hitting that home run
Alvarez.
In his first at-bat. That's what he does. He shows up every few weeks, and he hits a home run. Yeah. Now, Yordan is the guy where you'd say, all right, whatever the hell's going on with his knees, yeah, send this guy to Germany, send this guy to the Grand Caymans, wherever the hell they do any kind of new age experimental stem cell treatment or something like that. Get this guy's knees treated because he's too young. You can't be in your early 20s and have these chronic knee conditions like that and expect to have a long career.
No.
And honestly, for his own benefit, obviously I'd love to have him for the Astros, but I worry for the guy because he seems like a stand-up hell of a guy. And this has got to be, it's got to be kind of scary for him to be having all these issues with his knees.
No doubt. Texans training camp going on now. No practice today for the Texans. They resume practice tomorrow morning. I will continue to be out there providing the updates both on our website, SportsRadio610.com, as well as call-ins to In the Loop and to Clint Sterner in the show in the afternoon. So we got you covered here. Today's a day off, but we got you covered. And to that end, John McClain is going to join us at the top of the hour. And also, in this next segment, Seth and I will do a deep dive on what I saw day four of practice yesterday and some of the things Bill O'Brien had to say about this team about a week into practice, including a camp crush of one of the hosts here at Sports Radio 610. Crushed yesterday. We'll get to that next. It is Payne and Pendergast on a Wednesday morning. Text message. DeAndre Hopkins, sore left hamstring in BOB, I trust. Hey, we need to bring this up. We'll bring this up with McClain at the top of the hour. Seth, that tweet from the DeAndre Hopkins story that we did yesterday, Pro Football Talk, where DeAndre referred to himself in the third person. I didn't realize this, where he said, DeAndre Hopkins is not holding out. DeAndre Hopkins is fine. Whatever he did. Remember, we talked about this towards the end of the show yesterday. That was actually a DeAndre retweet of a McClain link that McClain posted. McClain did one of those things where he posted an article by somebody with the headline, but it kind of looked like John might have written it. You know what I mean? Because all he did was put the headline in the link. He didn't retweet somebody else's article. So it's John saying, is DeAndre Hopkins holding out, with a link to the article? Well, DeAndre obviously follows John from his time here in Houston, and he retweeted that with comment and said, DeAndre Hopkins is not holding out. So that tweet by DeAndre that got everybody all sort of worked up and turned into a topic yesterday was actually a retweet of McClain.
Yeah, so there you go. Okay, he was just responding to that headline by, well, yeah, and it was, well, there's an article in, it was Revenge of the Birds, which is a Cardinals blog, where they were wondering if DeAndre Hopkins is holding out. And then I actually read a couple of articles out of Phoenix yesterday, a couple people saying, hey, you know who goes every single snap every day? Larry Fitzgerald. Don't hear him complaining about nothing. And I don't know. The honeymoon might already be over with DeAndre Hopkins. They'll forgive with him as soon as he starts producing for them. But this is what happens when there are no preseason games. There's nothing going on. People start to speculate. Now, our listener, I will say this. Our listener who says DeAndre Hopkins' sore left hamstring in Bill O'Brien, I trust. I would point this out. Apparently, none of the starting receivers for the Texans right now are practicing either.
It is a little ironic.
Like, you got rid of DeAndre because he doesn't practice enough, and now none of these other guys are practicing. Yeah. So I don't know where we are with all of that.
Yeah. And just to be clear, so people are like, what? Fuller and Cooks aren't, but they're out of practice. They're in uniform. They're in pads. They're doing drills. What Seth is referring to, though, is the 11-on-11s. The 11-on-11 drills have not involved Will Fuller nor Brandon Cooks this whole time.
This is the quote out of Arizona, out of this Revenge of the Birds article. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't ask for double standards. Neither does Chandler Jones.
Oh!
They are two of our most passionate leaders in practice and are two of our all-in ballers on game days. So this is very obviously a fan website. He's talking about our guys, yeah.
Do you have a name for this person, Seth, or can I just call him Random Cardinal Jamoke? I'm just going to call him Random.
This is Walter Mitchell. It's on the SB Nation blog, Revenge of the
Walter,
Birds.
Walter, let me tell you something. You got DeAndre Hopkins at an extremely, at least what's perceived around the league, to be an extremely reduced rate. So just let it go. I get it. Larry Fitzgerald has set the standard too high for pretty much any human being in any walk of life. You know, anybody you're going to bring up, they're going to go, well, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, you know, if someone helps an old lady across the street, do you realize Larry Fitzgerald helps 10 old ladies across the street every morning? So if we're going to hold...
This would be like The Rock's ex-wife complaining to her new husband about how all the different ways he's not like The Rock.
Right.
Like, yeah, hey, do you know The Rock is worth like over $100 million and owns a pro football league.
Right.
Why don't you... Hey, The Rock has chiseled abs despite being a rather large human being. what's your deal?
That's right.
Steve. Yeah.
Right. Steve, can you imagine going from a guy named Dwayne The Rock Johnson to Steve? All right. Let's dig into some of the things that we saw out of practice and maybe some of the things we didn't see out of practice as well. In fact, that's where we'll start in today's practice report. Day four was yesterday. It was hot out there. It was sweltering. Yesterday was the first time it felt like a real Texans training camp practice. It was boiling hot outside. It was spirited. It was a lot of energy. The only thing that was a little askew was no J.J. Watt. And actually, that's been more the norm this training camp than not. J.J. there the first practice, but the last three he hasn't been there. I'm assuming he's somewhere working out, only because I think at any time of day it's a safe assumption that J.J. Watt is working out somewhere.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt posted on Instagram last night, 11 hours ago. He has a picture of him standing, kind of just sort of casually holding what looks like a chin-up bar and looking off into the distance, you know, kind of pensive. And the caption says, sometimes it's necessary to work in the shadows. So that's what JJ is doing. He is working in the shadows right now.
It's like Loudon Swain warming up before the big match
in the
dark gym.
That's right.
I was always jealous of Loudon Swain's. They had an auxiliary gym at that school.
Yeah.
It's a pretty fancy school.
Could warm up by himself to Lunatic Fringe. It was awesome.
So, yeah, Bill O'Brien is issuing this almost as a disclaimer every single time he talks to the media, where he says, hey, these are weird circumstances this year. We're trying to ramp everybody back up, and basically everybody's on an individual schedule. And he's not saying, hey, nothing to see here necessarily, but he is saying, you're going to see a lot of different guys practicing, not practicing. We've got them. We've got a plan for all of them. Try not to worry too much about it.
Yeah, I think we've reached a point with some of these guys, J.J., Fuller, and Cooks in the 11-on-11. We may have reached a point now where it's more newsworthy that they're actually doing these things and that they're not. So I think the angle I like with this part of it, that J.J.'s not there, because he's fine. He's going to play. If week one were tomorrow, he would be in the starting lineup. The opportunity it's created for guys, and Seth, it looks like Charles Omenihu is the guy that if it were a next man up situation, he would be the next man up, and Charles Omenihu has looked good in camp so far. He's gotten some pressure on the passer. He looks the part. He's come back in great shape. If you remember during his rookie year last year, Omenihu was a guy who O'Brien took some of those sort of lighthearted and semi-lighthearted jabs at from time to time. Omenihu took the offseason very seriously, and he looks to be in line to maybe increase his 41% snap count from last year.
I didn't remember that. Bill O'Brien took some shots
he
at
did.
Omenihu?
He did just little ones, little subtle ones, just little rookie jabs at him during the season. I'd have to go
really?
Back and find exactly what they were. Yeah.
I never got that read. I think Omenihu, he posted some videos, or somebody did, of him working out with, it was DeMarcus Ware, I believe, on some pass rush, doing some pass rush work with DeMarcus Ware. And Ware made the point that, hey, we're working on him rushing over the center and the guard because that's what we expect him to do this year, which I'm happy for because I think that that's where he fits best. He's done both. He's rushed inside. He's rushed outside. I think his body type and his athleticism level and everything, it all speaks to a guy that could rush. He can play defensive end in this scheme, but then on pass rushing downs, rush over the guard and center, and I think be very good at it.
I got quotes here from O'Brien last year. Maybe they weren't jabs, but I do remember him being, and this is October 29th, so this is halfway through the season, and this is right around the time J.J. Watt got hurt. So Omenihu is a guy who gets thrust further into the limelight after J.J. goes down last year. And halfway through last season, here are some of the things O'Brien was saying about Omenihu. It's just about overall consistency, doing it down after down. It's hard to do that as a rookie. In college football, you might have 100 plays on defense in a game, but pro football, you don't. So you have to be on the money every play. You have to be very consistent. So that's what I think any rookie is striving for. I think he works hard. I think for any rookie, it's about consistency, being as consistent as you possibly can. So O'Brien, you know, clearly at that point, Omenihu had issues with consistency. The thing about Omenihu, Seth, he was, for a rookie, he may not have been very consistent, but he was very productive when he was in there last year. He wound up being fifth among rookies in the entire NFL in QB pressures last year.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not a debate or anything. I don't know if I read that the same way, other than that, like, I think, you know, he was working towards, I think, proving that he could be consistent at that point, more than it was a criticism of his consistency.
No Fuller and no Cooks in 11-on-11, so similarly, it's opened up opportunities. Stevie Mitchell was the one who took advantage of it yesterday, made some more plays. Chad Hansen, who's my camp crush, he had an OPI in a pass drill that got O'Brien a little angry. Isaiah Coulter suiting up, and he made some plays out there too, Seth. Some guys getting opportunities to make impressions at wide receiver.
Look, the Chad Hansen stuff, it'd be cool if it works out. But I don't know how many times do we have to go through this. Like, almost every camp every year, right, there's a receiver that flashes early in camp when the coverages are vanilla, and maybe in the preseason they go on into that. And I mean, like, anybody listening right now could probably come up with 5, 6, 7 names of various guys that they can remember, like
Travis Labhart.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. That's all. It's not a criticism of Hansen, but he's been with 6 teams in the last 3 seasons.
Why?
There's a reason for that.
Why can't you let me enjoy my camp crush?
Oh, he can be your camp crush. I thought Keon Crossan was your camp crush.
No, I think I'm getting a legitimate relationship going with Keon Crossan. You know, Chad Hansen's just my side piece. Yeah.
Chad Hansen is the, hey, you can pull for him. You can hope that it works out. He's got a tough row to hoe, especially because Isaiah Coulter's in that group of guys, you know, fighting for playing time, and he's a fifth-round draft pick. Yeah. So I think Chad Hansen has to do enough in these practices to prove that Bill O'Brien should keep him around on practice squad, I'm guessing.
Coulter made a really nice play, Seth, in the one-on-one drills where you had corners and safeties covering receivers on a deep ball, you know, just a go route. And Deshaun threw it about 40, 45 yards into the end zone. Not a drop in the bucket, but it was more like throw it up there and let him go make a play kind of thing. And Coulter high-pointed it over my guy Keon Crossan, went up, came down hard on his shoulder, popped right up, flipped the ball to the trainer. Really nice catch, and as I'm watching, I'm going, he's probably the only guy in this receiving corps that goes up and makes that play because everybody else is 6 foot tall or shorter. You know, he's a bigger guy. So Coulter made a nice impression yesterday.
That's what you pointed out with Chad Hansen, is that he is a bigger guy too, and that's where the point you made yesterday was a good one, which is I think that whenever you're looking at a receiving corps, you want some diversity. Yeah. You want it like a basketball team. You want different body types, different speeds. And those two guys might have a leg up just in terms of having like a literal leg up. Their legs are taller than the other guys.
That's right. Oh, by the way, Fuller, no sleeves yesterday. He was sleeveless. He has gotten bigger this offseason. Sun's out, guns out for Will Fuller, yeah.
I feel like a lot of the old cliches are more true this year, where everybody comes back and says, oh, I'm the best shape I've ever been, or oh, yeah, put on 5, 10, 15 pounds of muscle.
It's real.
There's a little – a lot of these guys just look flat out yoked.
Yeah.
They've really benefited from not having all these damn OTAs and mini camps and everything that take you away from your training. What? And I like that. I think maybe if guys can make it through the first few weeks of training camp – they'll end up staying healthier this year because they didn't play a whole – like, so these off-season activities have turned into, like, playing an extra sport. Mm-hmm. Guys might as well be playing baseball in the off-season.
One other rookie who made a nice impression yesterday and who's looked, you know, looked like he fits in during camp. It's not like he's been out there just dazzling, but he looks like he fits in. John Reed, the fourth-round pick out of Penn State. He had a couple pass breakups and drills yesterday. He doesn't look overwhelmed out there during 11-on-11 or anything like that. He's looked good. I think he's – I don't know that he's going to be part of the tippy-top part of the rotation. That seems to be Conley and Roby and Lonnie Johnson until one of them loses their job or gets hurt. But Reed is – he's definitely in line to be the next guy after those three guys. I mean, after him, after that, it's Crossan, who's a special teamer. It's Cornell Armstrong, who gets an interception on one play and then gets coached really hard and yelled at on the next play. So – There's an opportunity there for John Reed. He's made a good impression.
I think that actually Romeo Crennel traditionally did a pretty good job of rotating guys in, younger defensive backs in, when he had them available. Last year he just flat out ran out of quality defensive backs by the Kansas City game. But I think that that'll be one of the challenges for Anthony Weaver is, okay, let's get John Reed a taste of NFL action early on, but there's no preseason. Like these guys in making that transition, I think especially for defensive backs, where all of a sudden it goes from college wide receivers to NFL wide receivers in elaborate schemes where guys just look like tracer bullets out there. How do you make that transition? It's doing it in small doses over those first several weeks. Hey, can John Reed get 5-10 snaps here and then just start to expand the workload?
It was a rough day yesterday as we continue to go through my bullet point observations from Texans practice, both yesterday and really through the first four practices. Seth, John Lopez's camp crush for the second year in a row is Caron Higdon, the running back out of Michigan who was a practice squad guy last year. I'll say this, up until yesterday had looked good in the first three practices, showed some burst in the running game, was getting a lot of reps, was getting a lot of touches in the 11-on-11 drills. Really rough day yesterday. They did a goal line offense drill. They did 11-on-11 goal. A lot of goal line work yesterday. A ton of goal line work yesterday, offense and defense. And the first set of goal line drills they did at the very beginning of practice, Higdon fumbles at the 1 yard line. The goal line drills at the end of practice, they put Higdon back in to let him try to make an impression again. Stopped not once, but twice by Zach Cunningham short of the goal line, where it's one of those deals where it's Higdon, there's a hole, he hits the hole, and there's Cunningham waiting for him, and maybe a bigger guy, like a David Johnson, like a motivated David Johnson, runs over Zach Cunningham, or at least gets enough lean to get the ball into the end zone. Higdon's a smaller guy, and Cunningham stopped him and pushed him backwards twice in a row. Rough day for Caron Higdon yesterday.
The ball security is a huge one there.
Especially for a guy like that.
Yeah, and especially when in this year where younger guys don't get a chance to prove themselves in preseason, those negatives like that, the fumbling, that weighs large in Bill O'Brien's brain.
Yeah.
I mean, I was curious. Usually I wouldn't make too much of this, except we've got nothing else to evaluate it on. The Texans' offensive line made a lot more progress in pass protection last year than they did in actual run blocking. So it is interesting to me that they couldn't punch it in on the goal line. Hopefully that's not too bad a sign. One thing that happens on the goal line when you're in a team practice is offensive linemen can't really submarine the way they might normally, where they just fire out hell-bent for leather.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit – it's not necessarily a true test, but I would love to hear that at some point, you know, that Texans offensive line just blasted a hole wide open and Caron Higdon just waltzed right in.
Yeah, make no mistake. The reason Higdon didn't get into the end zone had less to do with the offensive line and more to do with just the fact that he met a bigger guy in the hole and that guy pushed him back. Now, granted, that guy, Zach Cunningham, is one of the better inside linebackers, but it is what it is. Here's O'Brien yesterday. He was asked in his press conference before practice about balancing the reps for the quarterbacks, Watson, McCarron, I guess to an extent, Alex Magoo. Here's what he had to say.
It's definitely a balance. I think that obviously Deshaun, you know, gets the majority of the reps, but we've got to make sure that AJ gets a good amount of reps. And you know, Alex, it's tough because he just doesn't get a lot of reps. So just because if you gave everybody an equal amount of reps, you'd be running 100 plays of practice, and that's hard. You know, that's hard to do relative to how we have to ramp these guys up. So Deshaun gets the most. AJ's got to take advantage of his reps. And we have to make sure that we have AJ ready to play, but those guys just won't get as many as Deshaun.
Seth, you've pointed this out when I've gone to my, well, if Deshaun's hurt, the season's over kind of thing. And you pointed out, I think very astutely, that look, if Deshaun's hurt or God forbid, as a player who contracts the virus and you're out for a couple of weeks in quarantine, you just need a backup quarterback who can, who can muck your way through a game and get you a win or two in the 2 or 3 week period that he's out. You just need to have a guy where it's not going to all go to hell in a handbasket. McCarron's been that guy at times in the NFL. He's only started one game as a Texan. It was week 17 last year. I only bring this up because yesterday was not a day where I feel strongly that the Texans will win games without Deshaun Watson.
Oh, really?
AJ McCarron from drills against air to the 11-on-11, AJ McCarron was not good yesterday.
No way, no AJ. You can't do this. You got to pretend Nick Saban's out there, and you're trying to prove yourself to Nick Saban, just like you did whenever, I don't know, that motivational story I've heard about him as a freshman, proving to Nick Saban that he could play.
Oh, McCarron has a story.
No, the scout
like that.
team couldn't do anything, and then AJ McCarron came in, and all of a sudden the scout team was just beating up on the starters like it was nothing. It was something like that.
Okay.
Put that chip on your shoulder, just like the chip on David Johnson's shoulder.
All right, so those are my observations. I have more of them, but they are up on the website, sportsradio610.com. You can find them there. Again, no practice today, but we'll have you covered. I'll be on with the guys on In the Loop around 11, 5:15 with Clint Sterner in the show, chopping up everything. We'll dig into some of the position battles probably tomorrow at this time, Seth and I will, because some of them are starting to take shape. This is a team where most of the starting, we'll call it the starting 22 or the first layer of the depth chart, pretty much all etched in stone, but a lot of interesting battles for positions on this roster. We'll dig into those over the next day or two for sure.
I'm going to be on I'm doing a Buffalo radio hit after our show today.
Okay.
Because it worked out, and I guess so. I've been boning up on Buffalo and Josh Allen. Good reports on Josh Allen coming out.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
I've just had a smirk on your face.
Man, Josh Allen.
Come on.
It's Josh Allen.
Yeah, you know what Buffalo did? They got Stephon Diggs.
They did.
They actually paid for Stephon Diggs. They emptied the chamber for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
They didn't get him at the discount that Arizona got DeAndre Hopkins.
Rockets win last night over the Oklahoma City Thunder, 123-108, and it was a game. It was a fairly stressless game. If you're a Rocket fan, once the Rockets built a double digit lead, the closest the Thunder ever got was 10 points, and it seemed like every time they got the lead down to 10 or 12 points, the Rockets would drop 3 or 4 3-pointers on them. It'd be back to an 18 or 20 point lead. So it was a pretty easy watch if you're a Rockets fan. Halftime was interesting on the studio show for TNT. Charles Barkley was about to make a point about the game specifically, and in doing so, he sort of had this drive-by comment about James Harden, and things unraveled on the studio set from there.
I've said it before. James Harden is the best one-on-one player I may have ever seen in my life. You can spread...
Ever seen in your life?
In my life.
Come on, Charles.
No.
I mean, James is the best of this era.
Stop it. No, hold on for a second.
Don't say in your life.
Stop it. I'm helping you out. Stop it.
He's not in your life.
Don't say in your life. Just hold it. Just can I say what I want to say?
You can say what you want to say.
As great as Michael and Kobe were, and they're better players, they weren't the three-point shooters that James was.
No, James is the best
one-on-one player
in this era that I've ever seen. But I would say that if you... I don't want to be a hater. I'm just leaving it. If you put those guys in this era, come on.
Yes. But those guys weren't great three-point shooters.
So basically, Charles was making a point about the game, and it turned into Ernie sitting there watching these three argue about James Harden's place in NBA lore.
Yeah, and Kenny's basic point was because Shaq had his head down looking at something, and he was barely paying attention to the conversation. At one point, he says, "Wait, so you're saying he's the best ever because of that one thing? Well, the best ever player? Like, no. He's very specifically saying the best one-on-one player, which is different.
Which I think is a debatable point. I think Harden's an incredible one-on-one player.
Well, and Shaq." Biggest point was flat out the three-point shooting. His ability to pull up, to either drive or pull up, it creates such a conundrum for an individual defender because the guys didn't have to worry about Jordan out on the three-point line. Jordan's three-point stats are bolstered by the fact that for three of the seasons he was playing, they had that shortened three-point line, and he was still a 32% three-point shooter in his career. I think he was like 24% from the actual. The current line, I think it's a debatable point. I think those guys acting like it was the most ridiculous thing they'd ever heard was frankly, I was offended on behalf of James Harden.
I was offended on behalf of Charles Barkley. He was about to compliment James Harden. I'm like, don't stop stepping on him. I want to hear the rest of his point here. He was about they just came in and started double teaming Charles at that point.
Right, right. Well, no, and I felt like Shaq was on the Shaq was about to try to make a point about defense or something. Shaq, all he's saying is he's the best one-on-one scorer he's ever seen.
Right, right, right. All right, John McClain will jump in with us. We will dive back into some Texan storylines, some interesting things going on around the NFL. Astros and Rockets headlines will all be part of an hour with John McClain in an hour early as we roll on here on Wednesday it is, on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.